Uncle Fred in the Springtime by P.G. Wodehouse. Read by Martin Jarvis. The door of the Drones Club swung open, and a young man in form-fitting tweeds came down the steps and started to walk westwards. An observant passerby, scanning his face, would have fancied that he discerned on it a keen, tense look, like an African hunter stalking a hippopotamus. And he would have been right. Pongo Twistleton, for it was he, was on his way to try to touch Horace Pendlebury Davenport for £200. It did not take Pongo long to reach Journey's End. It was perhaps 10 minutes later that Webster, Horace's man, opened the door in answer to his ring.
"What ho, Webster?" said Pongo Twistleton. "Mr. Davenport in?"
"No, sir. He has stepped out to take a dancing lesson."
"Well, he won't be long, I suppose, what? I'll come in, shall I?"
"Very good, sir. Perhaps you would not mind waiting in the library. The sitting room is in some little disorder at the moment."
"Well, spring cleaning?"
"No, sir. Mr. Davenport has been entertaining his uncle, the Duke of Dunstable, to luncheon, and over the coffee His Grace broke most of the sitting-room furniture with the poker." To say that this information surprised Pongo would be correct. To say that he was astounded, however, would be going too far. The eccentricities of Horace Davenport's Uncle Alaric were a favourite theme of their conversation. In Pongo, Horace had always found a sympathetic confidant, for Pongo had an eccentric uncle himself. Though Pongo, hearing Horace speak of his Uncle Alaric and thinking of his own Uncle Fred, felt like Noah listening to someone making a fuss about a drizzle.
"What made him do that?"
"I'm inclined to think, sir, that something may have occurred to annoy His Grace." This seemed plausible, and in the absence of further data, Pongo left it at that. He made his way to the small apartment dignified by the name of Library, and, wandering to the window, stood looking out on Park Lane. It was a cheerless prospect that met his eyes. Like all English springs, the one which had just come to London seemed totally unable to make up its fat-headed mind whether it was supposed to be that ethereal mildness of which the poet sings, or something suitable for skiers left over from the winter. Was it conceivable, Pongo asked himself, that any man, even to oblige a future brother-in-law, for Horace was engaged to marry Pongo's sister Valerie, would cough up the colossal sum of 200 potatoes? The answer, he felt, was in the negative, and with a mournful sigh he turned away and began to pace the room. If you pace the library of No. 52 Bloxham Mansions, starting at the window and going straight across country, your outward journey takes you past the writing table. And as Pongo reached it, something attracted his eye. From beneath the blotter, the end of a paper was protruding, and on it were written the intriguing words, "Signed Claude Pott, Private Investigator." Now, Pongo was not in the habit of reading other people's letters, but here was one which a man of the nicest scruples could scarcely be expected to pass up. The thing was cast in narrative form, in which the leading character, a star part if ever there was one, was somebody referred to as the subject. The subject, who appeared to be abroad somewhere, for there was frequent mention of a casino, was evidently one of those people who live for pleasure alone. You didn't catch the subject doing good to the poor or making a thoughtful study of local political conditions. When he or she was not entering casino in comp of friends, 2 male, 1 female, at 11:17 p.m., he or she, for there was no clue as to whether this was a story with a hero or a heroine, was playing 10, riding H's, out on the golf links, lunching with 3 F's, driving to Montreuil with 1 M, or dancing with party consisting of 4 M's ditto F's, and in this latter case, keeping it up into the small hours. That it was a life of Riley that the subject had been leading was manifest in the document's every sentence.